Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about the work I have done before with Gregory, and also something we have done most recently with Gregory and Butler. And it's all about the modification of gravity. And I'm going to focus always focus on the 4D framework and not talk about DGP at all, given the nature of the audience, I think. Some of you guys know better than I do, so I'm just going to skip that part. So again, the motivation is also very going to be very brief because Andrew has just given a perfect summary yesterday. So I'm just just the point is we have this in our mind a cosmological constant problem. We try to so-called degravitate it, which is a nice nice way of summarizing all these kind of models in one language. And also, well, another thing we might hope to explain is the observed cosmic expansion. I just want to add that to Andrew's summary yesterday, that because given that I'm going to talk about massive gravity on Tc background, I just want to mention that it might be relevant, even more relevant than flat background, given that we are now living in the expanding universe, as well as it might be useful for inflationary epoch. Because if gravity is massive, you really have to worry about expansion of the spin two particle around those above those backgrounds. And another just technical issue that makes massive gravity on the Tc space interesting is the fact there is no VdVz discontinuity in those Tc or anti-Tc space. It's just that usually we say VdVz discontinuity is in the amplitude. There's a coefficient in front of the trace T. For the massless particle, massless spin two, you have a minus 1/2, and for massive, you get minus 1/3. Despite the mass can be very small, it still is minus 1/3. So that's at the linearized level, it makes the two theory completely distinguishable by even just solar system experiment. But then, of course, in a more complete framework, you would like that you would say that nonlinear correction becomes important and will save you from this discontinuity. But it is still nice if we can have a model where you have a massive gravity, but on the linearized level, there is no VdVz discontinuity. It happens that in Tc space, that is true because the coefficient is not minus 1/2 or not neither minus 1/2 nor minus 1/3, but it's this combination. And you see the funny thing is there the two limits don't commute. So if you take mass square to be zero, first keep lambda non-zero, you smoothly goes to the massless limit. So that's the interesting part of this model. But unfortunately, you have to go into the so-called forbidden mass range because when mass is smaller than 2h2 lambda here. Although it's true that there is a smooth transition, but you have to go through a region where you have a ghost in the theory. So that makes this smoothness not useful at all. And so then this number, I think.
What happens when that thread is three is
This there's a ghost. So even though you can smoothly go into, well, just look at the amplitude, the coefficient gets mostly connected. But then in the region, there's a region where you have ghosts, so you're not allowed to go there. So that's why even though you don't have VdVz discontinuity, but in some sense it is still there. It just
ignoring the possible ghosts, it's funny that the denominator blows out some value of M.
For some value of M. Yes, that's right. That's just because at that point, that particular helicity node vanishes. That's the enhanced symmetry point. Yeah, that's right. When this equals to zero, okay, I'm sorry. The ghost range is here, I think. That the reason it blows up is actually I think that most just decoupled from T. You cannot couple to T. So the coupling in a sense is zero, and so if you inverse that coupling, you get inverse property. So basically, you're not allowed to have key in that thing, the trace of the meaning. I'll come to this point again. Okay, so just briefly mention this massive gravity, because again, Andrew has explained very well yesterday. But I just want to mention it in the data background in my mind, because okay, so at the linearized level, what you mean by massive gravity, just the simplest way just to add a mass term which is quadratic in terms of the metric perturbation. So because of the tensorial structure, you have two possible constructions, either it's H mu nu squared or H trace squared. So in principle, then there can be a coefficient alpha. The point of Pauli-Fields mass combination is to say that alpha has to be one, because otherwise the theory will introduce will contain a ghost. There are many ways of seeing that. One way is just to see that you just expand your perturbation into this to the mode decomposition of the perturbation, and you just write down the expression for H mu nu squared and trace squared. I'm doing that for general De Sitter background. So this H squared is the curvature of the De Sitter space. So H is the curvature. So for the flat background, just set this H squared to be zero. But no matter what, the point is there is a tau log squared tau term, which is a forced derivative term. And we know that in theory, with this kind of kinetic term, it's almost inevitable to have a ghost. So the only way to make sure that this term doesn't appear is to cancel these two. So therefore, the coefficient alpha is fixed to be one. I just want to mention this because, as you can see, in general De Sitter background, the situation doesn't change. And that's why in De Sitter space, you probably still have to stick to Pauli-Fields combination, namely setting alpha to be one to avoid ghost. And that's just what I already mentioned. The normal massive gravity of flat space-time has this problem with so-called VDVD discontinuity. With a mass, the amplitude given by this, the propagator, and without a mass, it's given by a minus 1/2. So that's one problem. And the other problem with massive gravity, the simplest method, is that there's no consistent nonlinear completion, except if you introduce higher larger extra dimensions. And there are many ways to understand. Sorry.
So you're thinking about does it matter which which foliation of the dosager space we think about? Because so the problem with having a ghost is an instability. But then in an inflationary universe, instability is kind of
the problem with the ghost is really, well, the two type of instability that at classical level you do not distinguish. That's right. At classical level, a normal ghost with normal mass is the same as the normal particle with tachyonic mass, and vice versa. But then, if you start talking about quantum perturbation, then if you have ghosts, it doesn't make any sense. But depends on the mass. If you flip the mass in the ghost, to have a tachyonic ghost will be then. I think at the classical equation of motion, we're not be able to distinguish the two. But you're still talking about.
The thing is that as k goes to infinity, the mass doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Right? So the only kinetic term, and if it has the wrong sign.
That's right.
And it couples to one that has the right sign, then the two become.
Once you start talking about coupling to the. Without coupling, there's no way. Yeah, once you start talking about coupling to source, sure, then the source will precisely excite those ghosts and negative energy mode. Yeah, that's right. Without coupling to the source, you can flip the sign of the action at the classical level. That makes no difference. But with the coupling, yeah, you cannot do that. Okay, so what I was trying to say, okay, I want to try to say that the theory has no nonlinear completion. There are many ways of understanding, but it seems to be just a okay. The core of this problem is the counting of the degree freedom, because normally the reason you don't have this similar problem in the in gauge theory, for example, is that for massless particle you have two degree freedom, and if you get a mass, it becomes 3 degree freedom. If you do the counting, in fact, it works perfectly, because with a without mass, you have gauge symmetry. And so the constraint, you have gauge constraint that remove 1 degree freedom, but because the gauge constraint is first class constraint, it introduces a further degree constraint in the phase space that remove another degree freedom. That gives you from 4 to 2 degree freedom. In the massive case, you do not have gauge freedom anymore, but then there you have the so-called Bianchi identity that will remove 1 degree freedom for you, which perfectly match the fact that for a massive vector boson, you want 3 degrees freedom. If you do the same counting for gravity, it just doesn't work, because you find that the metric has 10 components, but without the gauge freedom, you only have 4 Bianchi identities that can remove 4 degrees freedom for you. So naively, you always get 6 degrees freedom with 1 extra degree freedom you don't want, because for massive spin 2, what you hope is to get 5 degrees freedom. So there are many ways of seeing that. Let me just focus on this way. If you look at the sigma tau system, as I have shown you, just in the mass term. So if you add these two, and forget about the vector mode, which is always not dynamical anyway. So just look at the sigma tau system. On the flat background, with the Pauli Fias combination, what happens is that, this is actually true with any combination, that there's no tau square quadratic term for tau. So on one hand, tau is not dynamical because it doesn't have its own kinetic term. On the other hand, it's not even quadratic in the action. And therefore, if you integrate out tau, it works like a Lagrangian multiplier, which enforces that box sigma equals 0, which makes sigma not dynamical either. So the two spin 0 component, they both are not dynamical on the flat background space sigma and tau here. But this is no longer true once you go to the de Sitter space, because when h square is non-zero, you do have quadratic term for tau. So even though tau is still not dynamical, after you integrate out tau, it doesn't give you further constraints. All it does is just relate tau to sigma. So in that, so you will end up with kinetic term for your sigma, which is indeed then the unpleasant degrees freedom that you want to describe, which is in the de Sitter space. There's a range for sigma to become a ghost. Okay, so I just want to mention this. So now I want to talk a bit away from the main topic, and I want to mention something I've done with Gregory before, and it's a very, very simple thing, but I think it might worth thinking about. As I already mentioned to you, the main problem with massive gravity is you have too many degrees freedom. You have the 6 degrees freedom that always behaves very badly, it seems like. The idea was very simple-minded. Suppose, without even talking about massive gravity, can I just remove that unwanted degree freedom from the beginning? And so this indeed has been studied in, of course, may not be from the same motivation, but in a similar method studied by many people before. So these are the people I know, but you were asking. And I will go back into it because it was a long time ago. I don't remember who did what anymore. So I go back to check it. But anyway, it was a very old idea, so-called unimodular gravity. Namely, let's just try to fix this square root of g to be 1. Of course, I'm now breaking the general covariance. But let's try to do that. Okay, just saying, which means Einstein Hilbert action is only true in a space coordinate, time coordinates where the volume measure is 1. Okay, so the way you do that is just introduce a Lagrange multiplier to impose this condition. So now you write down the equation of motion, you see this lambda behaves more or less like a most cosmological cosmological constant, except that this lambda doesn't have to be a constant at this level. It's just a Lagrangian multiplier you introduce into your action. However, the funny thing is, if you take the Bianchi identity of this equation, okay, this is a constraint coming from the equation motion for lambda. But if you take the Bianchi identities, you know, on the first equation, you already automatically get this equation, b nu lambda equals zero, meaning lambda has to be a constant. So this is not, this lambda is a constant, is not what I put into the action by hand, but it's it's the consequence of the equation of motion. And so therefore, lambda is a, in principle, is a dynamical field, but it turns out to be a constant of the integration, which can be chosen to equal capital lambda. And therefore, even if you start with a huge cosmological constant, you can still have a flat Minkowski diagram as a solution by just choosing this lambda to be this capital lambda. So that was a simple-minded way of solving so-called cosmological constant problem. But of course, you don't really completely solve this problem for many reasons. One criticism is that you really have infinite many possible solutions. You can choose lambda to be any constant you want. So why do you have to choose lambda to equal capital lambda? So in a sense, it is still the same fine-tuning that you want to remove at the beginning. Only you're now fine-tuning in the classical framework, not in the quantum framework. That's one. So there's no reason to prefer the flat solution. And the other criticism is that this lambda is not a radiatively up. Also, as Justin mentioned this morning, it's difficult to put into a covariant framework. But also, it's also radiatively not stable, meaning this lambda, if you start talking about loops, if I think of quantum gravity, of course, we don't have a UV complete quantum gravity, that may be string theory. But at the low energy, much lower than the cutoff, I can think of it as effective field theory. In that language, I can still talk about loops and so on. And then I find that the lambda will naturally take the quadratic term once you start talking about loops, as mass term and kinetic term. So if once you, so quantum mechanically speaking, at one particular energy, yes, lambda works like a cosmological constant. But if you just start running, it quickly acquires Planckian kinetic term and mass term. And so that will no longer behave like a massive Lagrangian multiplier. Once it has quadratic term, it starts propagating just like a 6 degree freedom. So it's, I don't remember on top of my head anymore. But I think you should, it most likely it behaves, I believe it behaves like that, but I need to check it.
Why do you say it behaves like
I don't, I don't, okay, I don't have a good reason
like
for that.
Like an ordinary scalar field.
Yes, but this is typical thing that, that's only by my experience. Whenever I work with Lagrangian multiplier, if for some reason it stops behaves like Lagrangian multiplier, acquires kinetic term, what it behaves is always very much similar to the helicity zero mode. It's just replacing the helicity zero mode that you want to replace, you want to remove at the beginning. So it usually behaves just like the helicity zero mode. So that's why it's. Then you have that. That's right. Then you have the 6 degrees freedom, but maybe you don't. Yeah, maybe it's not that. Yeah, that's true. So I don't immediately remember now because it's interesting. I need to check. Okay. But according just my experience, seems like every time this thing happens, it's normally. But I don't have a good explanation.
But as far as I can tell, it's not any different from a scalar field. For some reason, it's a kinetic term.
Could be negative. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess what you're saying is that if there is no kinetic term for a scalar field, then quantum correction gives us a negative.
No. There's no general rule for that.
Okay.
It's only for the gravity. It's only the something special about this graph. No, there's no general. The sign, I don't think there's the term. Okay. So what I want to say is we have thought about this unimodular gravity, and we ask ourselves, can we improve this, we improve that model? So initially, we just have this mind that constructing a self-consistent mass of gravity within the 4D framework, as I said, maybe by removing the unwanted degree freedom at the classical level, and once you start adding mass time, it will not show up. So that was a simple-minded idea. But when, after we studied this more, we started to understand better what we were actually doing. What we were doing, we prefer to think of this model in this way now. So in any gate theory or gravities, once you start putting into a quantum framework, you will have to do path integral. And in the path integral, you always need to gauge fix. So whenever you gauge fix it, you introduce so-called this Fadel pop-up curves to make sure that the measure is invariant. Normally, and so there is operator called the Fadel pop-up operator. Usually in gate theory, you will forbid this operator to have zero, non-trivial zero mode. At the zero gauge view background, you have very good reason for that, because the zero mode for this operator is not normalizable. And therefore, there's good reason to forbid it. And then you integrate over your gauge view configuration all the way up to you have a normalizable zero mode of your FP operator, and then you stop there before you reach that boundary, so-called Grebov rise. Because after that, you can convince yourself that you repeat your gauge orbit. So the gauge orbit intersect with yourself. So you don't want to go beyond the Grebov horizon. So there's good reason in gauge theory to discard the FP zero mode. But in the gravity, it's not immediately clear to us, because in gravity, on a general background, if you don't have asymptotic flatness, it's not clear what kind of boundary condition is allowed, what kind of boundary condition is not. For example, on De Sitter space, even for a scalar particle, if you do the mode expansion, go very far into the infinite, it diverges, it blows up. But there's nothing wrong with that, because simply because the universe is expanding exponentially at that in the far infinite. So observationally, it seems like gravity could have at cosmological level, it could have non-trivial background. So it's not clear what kind of boundary condition we can impose. So if we relax ourselves to say that we allow for the operator to have non-trivial zero mode, then the interesting consequence is that you can have non-trivial you can have non-trivial background in your equation of motion. So that's what we try. For example, if I try to do the gauge fixing in this way, suppose we choose this gauge, which is really just this condition. We found this condition to be particularly convenient. It has many different names for this condition. Lots of people seem to have studied these conditions for many different reasons. But anyway, let's introduce four Lagrangian multipliers. And then just follow the similar to unimodular gravity. You derive Einstein equation with these corrections. Then you derive the equation motion for lambda that just give you this enclosed these four constraints. So that's perfectly a gauge fixing procedure if you put in a quantum framework, except there is also but there are pop-up ghosts that I'm ignoring right now. And so, okay, this I'm just saying this condition has many interesting properties, but ignore that. Follow the normal procedure. You do the Bianchi identities on this first equation and using the second equation to simplify the result. And in the end, you find with some algebra, it turns out to be a very simple equation like this. Okay? So now, the interesting consequence is that, again, just like a unimodular gravity, given any cosmological constant capital lambda, I can find a solution for my small lambdas, for my lambda mu nus, to satisfy this equation. If we satisfy this equation, put this back into the Einstein equation, you find that just cancels the cosmological constant contribution. And therefore, you get the flat solution out of it. Okay? So
is there some reason why you didn't put lambda in originally? I'm a bit confused.
No. I was just not being careful. There should be a cosmological constant, yeah.
It's an L matter, isn't it?
That's right. Because then I cannot make my point. Yeah. My point is, if you have capital lambda, you can cancel it. Yeah.
Is that eta the flat metric?
Or yeah, if eta is the flat Minkowski metric. Yeah.
I guess.
What if you're not flat
Minkowski? That's right. I'll go there.
I'm a little bit confused about the philosophy here.
Okay.
One way of understanding Fadiev-Popov gauge fixing is to say that you're taking your gauge field and splitting it into a gauge fixed piece and the gauge transformation, and then just splitting the integral and splitting
the That's right.
From that point of view, the zero modes of the Fadiev-Popov determinant correspond to gauge fields that don't actually change the field itself.
That's right. Okay.
Integrate over them if they not in your.
Okay. No. This philosophy is. I have to confess that I haven't completely thought through it straight. But the thing is, this FP zero mode on the gauge field, yes, you don't want to integrate over it, but you can integrate all the way up to the boundary, right? So now the question is, how far, whether can you reach the boundary, or can you include the boundary inside your integration? And if you do that, what's the consequence? That's one question. And secondly, I'm not really saying that I need that gauge field configuration. You see, here, this is really my Fadiev-Popov operator in this particular gauge fixing. It turns out to be this.
Yeah.
So I'm just allowing for my Lagrangian multiplier to have non-trivial zero mode of this operator.
Okay.
So there's indirect argument. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Normally, if you do gauge fixing, you don't really introduce Lagrangian multiplier. You use, RKCG or Feynman gauge in many different ways. But we have discussed in this paper briefly that they're equivalent. I can read the equivalent. So in the end, what this thing is saying, this can be expressed in terms of the gauge field. It's a composition of the gauge view, which we tend to think you can think of as a condensate of this view on your vacuum. So normally it's zero. Normally this mode is non-normalizable in gauge view, so you don't really allow this kind of a vacuum. You don't call it a vacuum because this boundary condition forbids. But if you allow that. You can understand it as a charge distribution in your universe. There's a particular charge distribution that's given from the beginning for no reasons. You can think of it this way as well. But of course, we don't observe those charge densities there, so we say there's no such a thing. But in the gravity, it's not immediately clear, right? Well, maybe dark energy is something like that. Yeah, we don't know.
Can you go back to that? No, just go back. I just want to look at your action again. But you have to ask a question. This is like a conserved charge, the conserved current, right?
Wait. This
no,
one?
No, this is not a conserved current.
It's because the break general covariance here,
not
so it's different. Yeah.
It's partial, not grand.
That's right. Uh-huh.
And so my question was in the Bianchi identities, I just wanted to be sure. Those both have to be partials. The first one isn't a grad.
Indeed, you will do general, I do covariant derivative. These are partials.
Yes.
Okay. That come from the equation motion.
Yes.
But the Bianchi is a covariant derivative.
Right.
But on the condition of this constraint, it simplifies to be normal derivative again.
Those really are partials.
These are partials again. Yes. These are partials.
Come on. Sure.
Yeah, they have to be. Otherwise, the whole thing is trivial. So you violently break general and covariant.
Not that violently, because again, think. Look.
That's a matter of opinion.
No. Because we think of it as a gauge fixing in the quantum framework. And therefore, of course, you break general covariance. That's what gauge fixing does, right? So this term, you think of it.
Just as a comment, you could choose
Yes, you
any
can.
Any other covariant that's, derivative that's, that was not compatible with the metric to do the same job.
No, I don't think so. Because to reach this condition, we do have to use the fact that we use Levitch return connection. Because that's how I relate general.
Why can't I use some covariant derivative?
But then you cannot make use of this.
Not compatible with the metric.
Yeah, but then you cannot make use of this one.
Sure, I could. I would just have grab.
Oh yeah, but then this equation was very complicated.
Well, you can have everything.
Of course. Yeah. Then you get everything you want. Yeah. No, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying you don't have to use partial if you don't want to. You could use any covariant derivative that is not. Does not have grad g.
Okay.
All I'm saying.
Okay.
Now it's probably easiest to do it this
that's
way,
right.
But I certainly don't see how it's unique.
That's right.
I mean, I can bust general covariance up in lots of ways.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree. In fact, with different gauge conditions, you can get different results.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. But so the uniqueness should come, we believe, should come from the correct understanding of the boundary conditions that you can choose. Right now, we completely ignore the fact that we have the even at this flat space. You see, we choose this boundary, we choose lambda to satisfy this equation. It really is not a normalizable mode. Okay, so we don't really believe this is the right answer to anything. But if you know what kind of because this is has to be self-consistent. On the one hand, you have to choose the you know where the solution is, and you know how to reach that solution by choosing lambda in particular way. And then you have to understand what kind of boundary condition is satisfied. So all three conditions together might be able to give you a unique answer.
But it doesn't make sense.
No?
You're saying a coordinate type. You go to you fix this gauge in which there is no lambda. You say you're fixing your gauge so that.
No. Gauge fixing is just one way to generate this charge background. In some sense, another way to say that, once you have the charge background, you break gauge covariance, gauge symmetry, right? So there are many ways to break gauge symmetry by having a classical condensate background. The problem is what kind of gauge breaking that you choose that give you permissible boundary conditions. At this point, we don't fully understand that.
So
the hope is maybe that will give you a self-expanding unit.
Just to clarify, but at this stage, if you do this, you still have this business where either you get a non-zero lambda or a zero lambda. I presume the capital lambda in the second one could have any value.
That's right.
Right. So mm-hmm. You still have the same problem you had before. There's no reason you got.
Okay.
This.
Now that's my second point. Yes, you have two. Now you have two possible solutions. Either you have eta mu nu with complete flattening Kopsky space, and that's the solution. Or you have the De Sitter space setting lambda to zero. You don't have anything in between. Okay, in between you may have, which is more complicated solution that we couldn't find. But if you stick to maximally symmetrical solutions, you don't have them anymore. Simply because this equation is non-trivial to satisfy. If this metric is in general.
But I can have any De Sitter or anti De Sitter metric I want.
No.
Why not?
Only flat or this.
Why?
Setting this to be
capital lambda arbitrary.
Oh, capital lambda is arbitrary.
So
I'm
I
just
have
saying
any value that I
given given any capital lambda, you have two solutions now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the improvement over the unimodular gravity. We are given any capital lambda, you have infinite many solutions.
But that may be because of the particular gauge fixing
that
you've chosen.
That's right.
I suspect that if you choose the equivalent harmonic gauge fixing, but in terms of some background metric
mm-hmm.
that admits some different conformal killing vectors, I suspect
mm-hmm.
that you'll get a solution with whatever symmetry that background metric has. That would be my guess.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Anyway.
I mean, your gauge fixing
involves
a flat metric to begin with.
I see. I see what I see your point. Yeah. But what I have gauge fixed is really this condition. by that by itself, it doesn't really say that the background has to be flat. So yeah.
Well, if you look at your harmonic coordinate, that's equivalent. Right. To
that's right. That's right. Yes.
If you change the covariant derivatives in your harmonic coordinate condition to covariant derivatives, so, well, there are a couple of different ways of saying this. I mean, if you look at the original Bach de Donder,
the Donder
page here, if you just change that partial derivative to a covariant derivative with respect to a background metric.
I see
right
that.
Now it's an ordinary derivative. Change that to a covariant derivative.
I see. Then you are
introducing a new background metric. You're secretly already introducing a background metric here by writing that as a partial derivative. A partial derivative is a derivative with respect to coordinates in a particular coordinate.
Yeah. It's possible.
The answer is almost certainly going to depend on how you choose that background covariant.
I think that somehow taking the knowledge that you have the system that you just sort of you're trying to find some situation where this background constant almost exactly cancels that will tell you what gauge fixing is the right one.
Yeah.
And so that there's nature has chosen your coordinate system. You're just trying to move nature's.
The logic is try to find from try to find the right fixing, give you the right
assumption. Nature has a coordinate system of lights.
Right. And so I think that implicitly that somehow there's all there'll only be one. There'll be a unique way that it all works out. You have boundary conditions that make sense, and this is going to be it. The hope. And so obviously, there's many different ways you can do it. But I think the claim is.
We have tried different ways. In fact, you do get different results. Yeah.
But still, if you do it this way, lambda, capital lambda, still.
Oh, capital lambda. We don't solve that problem.
All right.
That's a quantum problem, right? All right? Yeah, it is arbitrary. The hope is, given arbitrary lambda, I can still get the right solution.
With ranking covariance.
No, because you think of it. Yeah, in some sense, it does, because now you have a background. The background that breaks the covariance. The theory from the framework itself is not.
But no one told you in advance covariance is what you were trying to say, blah, blah, blah. You're trying to get the solutions first.
If you want to give up covariance, then everything goes.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. Maybe I should move on to the second topic. But yeah, I from the response, I think it's an interesting topic.
So, you are doing a bit more than gauge fix. Normally, when you gauge fix, breaking too much, you get enough for any whatever. But they agree with the normal equation.
They agree. Agree if you forbid this non normalizable amount. Again, that's what we're claiming. Yeah. It does agree usually because this mode is not normalized.
So I guess the right solution is those ones.
Normally we will say this is the right solution.
And
somehow we say this might also be interesting. You could at least might worth thinking about. That's all I've seen.
Okay,
so
can you jump from one another? Or there are two branches. You have the same matter now.
No, I'm setting matter to be zero at least. But the capital lambda,
the same source.
That's right, because I'm allowing for, in some sense, the charge condensating the vacuum.
But can you turn off all the solution
to another? Only from experiment, I would say. Only from experiment, only from observation, right? Of course, in principle, you can choose these two, or they're set by the initial condition, in a sense, or the boundary condition. In principle, normally you will say this is the right solution because this, this is ridiculous mode. It grows linearly in X. So it's forbidden normally. Okay. That's all. Okay, anyway, so I just want to mention that because it's a gauge fixing scheme, so automatically this Lagrangian multiply is a stable, relatively stable. Because in a full BIST symmetry complete, before FP goes completed theory, you have this BRSD symmetry that automatically guarantees the transversality of the two-point functions. So this Lagrange multiplier is a thing. So we were interested in this thing, and we were saying whether you know maybe you can, as I we agree that to explain the current universe expansion might be too crazy, but maybe we can do something for the early universe where we put into a mini superspace so that we don't have so many degrees freedom. So maybe we can do a more general analysis in a smaller framework. And so that's what we do using that model. Then we have a disappointment that the flat space I was talking about or trying to advertise is unstable once you put into this framework. Okay. So this is the Schrodinger equation that looks like. So here is where the flat space, so this is potential in the Schrodinger equation if you put in the mini superspace. And so the potential is not stable. But again, because this we don't really think this is the solution you should be very seriously. So again, with the hope is if we know what kind of boundary conditions we should choose for lambda, maybe your solution is somewhere here and somewhere there. It might actually correspond to a particular expanding universe, which might be more interesting. Okay, so I want to come back to myself, my main topic with my rest of the time is the massive spin to our DC dot background. So again, this action, as I explained to you, that you just put the polyfiat mass combination in the action. Okay. So but except this now, if Einstein-Hilbert action, you expand around the quadratic order around this either background. So here it is. H squared is the curvature of the DC space. And so the theory, as I already explained, that when h equals zero is a consistent massive spin two. Because it's all at a linearized level, so at that level it is consistent. But if H is non-zero, there is a ghost if mass is too small. This has been discussed by many people before. Gucci was, I think, was the first one, and then Dessler and Waldron gave a very much more comprehensive analysis. They actually, I think, they extended to higher spin as well. In any way, so a very quick way to see this ghost to appear is just again do the mode extension like that, and you write down the all the terms in the action. At this point, it looks fine. The sigma looks still okay, but oh, again, as I mentioned, tau in this situation has a quadratic term, so you can only integrate out tau. If you do that, that's what you end up with. So this is the spin two part of the action, which looks fine. And this is the helicity zero mode, which is also almost fine, except that there is, you know, in front of it, there is a coefficient. And this coefficient tends to negative when the mass is too small. And that's what the Higuchi goes. That's the goal. So what happens when m squared equals to h squared? At that point, you see this term vanishes completely. So if you have a t mu nu here, you solve for the amplitude, you get divergence precisely because you invert this coefficient, right? So so if this is zero, this term simply disappears from the action, and therefore you are not allowed to couple your theory to the trace of t mu nu, because it just demands the trace to be zero. And so that is of course because at that point the theory is conformally symmetric. So t mu nu cannot have any trace to couple to it. We have an enhanced local symmetry, which is really a conformal symmetry. M equals zero is okay? Oh, M equals zero, normally you will see there's a ghost, but that's again enhanced gauge symmetry that saves you. Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to be obvious here. No. That's true. Yeah.
The whole thing is
under. It's just naively if you expand Einstein-Hilbert action using this language, the sigma always behaves as a ghost, right? As a wrong sign kinetic term.
That's true.
Yeah.
Then that question whether you're
but
no, I know the answer's right, but I'm just
yeah.
Question whether that's right.
Yeah, okay. It's,
the argument is that term is negative term branch, but as three squares is goes. That argument fails from zero.
Yeah, but that's because we have a gauge symmetry there. That's different. So once you have the intense symmetry, it's different.
The level of this effective action, you would say the ghost gets in at H, and then you know your effective theory by the time you're going to I think that's the argument you use.
No, I don't think this argument fails at all, because once you have the mass, you don't have gauge symmetry. So there's no more further symmetries that you can impose. And so this analysis is enough. You see, once you have gauge symmetry, then you have to be careful with the apparent ghost mode in your action. But if you don't have the gauge symmetry,
he's just saying when M is zero, it's not obvious to see that.
That's right. That's right.
That's all
we say. That's right. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, there is a loophole. If there is other local symmetry I don't see, then you are right. Then you are right. Yeah. Then you are right. Yes, but given the knowledge that we don't know there's any gauge, additional gauge symmetry there, then this matter is yeah.
But when n is zero, the coefficient in front of the sigma box sigma is a constant. And what probably happens is you can do an additional transformation on each TT to kill off those two terms.
Yeah. I can't remember how it works technically.
Yeah. And when M is not zero, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's it.
Yeah.
So you need an M, you need a zero less than M squared, less than 2 M squared.
Sorry.
Sigma is a ghost, you need a zero,
you mean bigger than zero?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. So that's just the point. So this is the summary. So if this mass is too small, there is a ghost. If it's bigger, it's okay. And if it equals, you cannot couple to trace of the union.
That's good. That's very interesting. So if
there
are the range, what's the mass?
The mass is a very tricky thing here, because on the theta space, what do you call a mass of a scalar? You need to be more careful.
But you can do it by summarizing scalars.
I think you still have to be careful, because you need to do the mode expansion, and then you have to identify what do you call ghost, what do you call mass, because the mode is not usual, because you don't have asymptotic flatness anymore. So what do you mean by a particle? Is ambiguous in this language. Ah, yeah, of course. If the mass is greater than Hubble, there's no problem. Right? But the stability, if you look at this naively, you will say this is a tachyon. Right? Naively, it looks like this is a tachyon, but it's actually not. This has been computed by Dezer and Waldron. And so in this theta space, this is very tricky. I have to say I need to study that further as well, because you have a horizon. So if you, because normally we say mass square bigger than zero, it's stable. And so it's not a tachyon. Less than zero, the mode is non-stable and it's a tachyon. But once you put in the theta space, you can only say that all the way up to horizon. Once you go beyond horizon, nothing is stable. So if you restrict yourself that you only want the energy to be positive definite within the horizon range, then Dezer has proved that both these modes are normal mode in the sense they are stable if this M squared is bigger than zero. So if you look at this, it looks like this combination is a mess, but it's not. Because you're expanding around the theta background. It's a tricky business there. So what do you mean by mass is tricky. But if you only want stability within the horizon range, then you can prove that as long as this thing is positive, everything is stable, provided that this coefficient is positive. If this coefficient is negative, then there's no chance for a positive definiteness of the energy. Within your causal patch. So the mass is a tricky thing. So I try to avoid that, but okay. Okay, so now here's where the study started. So Gregor and Alberto, they have worked on BGP model for quite a while, and they noticed a very interesting thing, that on the self-accelerating branch, the lightest KK mode for the graviton has the mass precisely given by this relation. Okay? It is true that in that mode, there is a ghost. Now we more or less agree that there is a ghost on the self-accelerating branch. But there was no problem with coupling the theory to a trace of Timmy Nim, right? That is not a problem. So they're just curious what really happened. And so they went out and studied and realized that it's the actual scalar, the additional scalar that comes into the, in a 4D framework, this additional scalar, you know, more or less is just G55, that helps you. And if you write down the effective action in 4D, you find the lightest scalar couples to the perturbation of the metric in this particular way with this particular combination, this O operator. This O operator has lots of special properties. For example, if you hit on the metric perturbation, it really just gives you the perturbation of the Ricci coverage. On the other hand, you can also, purely from the 4D framework, you can motivate such an operator by just requiring that it does not spoil your Bianchi identity. You look at this action, you find your Einstein equation will be modified by additional term, which given essentially by this object. And this operator has a special property that's almost, I think it's unique, that it's automatically, identically transfers. So it will not spoil your Bianchi identity. Because of that reason, the equation of motion and Bianchi's and trace all get simplified dramatically. And so you get the propagator for your H mu nu in this framework, in this theory. That's your propagator. And here is the Lisch-Narrowicz operator. The only reason you can use that is on the non-trivial background, and box operator do not propagate, you know, do not commute with tensors nicely. Well, this one has, but roughly you can think of it as just a box operator. Okay? And so this is the amplitude here. I'm just rewriting the same propagator in a slightly different way. And then you see clearly this combination is a ghost, okay? I'm using mostly positive signature, so minus sign here is actually normal mode. A plus sign here indicate a ghost. And so you see there is a ghost. But, okay, and so the question is there a way you can decouple the ghost? And so they move on and try. Just introduce a kinetic term for phi with some unknown kinetic term, we don't know. Okay? Then also couple the phi to the trace C with some particular coupling constant Q, we don't know. Okay? And this K is just some operator. Well, for some reason, we believe Q is helpful. We define Q, but really, it's just box plus some number. And here, K is again box plus some number. Okay? And so that's a kinetic term plus some mass term, maybe. So just work out this theory, and I ignore all the details, but in the end, you find your propagator is given by this expression now. Then you find a very interesting, so A is here. A is here, okay? This is the A, coefficient A unknown. You find just that Q equals A, and at least at the level of this propagator language, there is no ghost. Okay? So even if there is a ghost, this ghost is not coupled to your physical metric acumen. So if you imagine you can diagonalize your action, you can throw that out of your action.
So what's capital Q
again? Capital Q is just this operator. For some reason, because this non-commutative of the covariant derivative and so on, this operator has particular meanings, so we just introduce. But really, you can ignore that. It's just box plus some number. Q is also box plus some.
Phi is just, so you have a massive
graph,
and then you're writing a scalar.
So that's right. You have additional scalar.
So that you know, one particle exchange, they cancel. One is a ghost here.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Worry that it's nonlinear level.
That's true. That's true. We don't have a nonlinear framework for this so far. Yes. Yeah. That is the word. Yes. But here, at the linearized level, that ghost doesn't couple to your physical magic. Okay. That's where this study stopped. And then we move on to the next question. That's where I started contributing to the second half of the story. So so we were discussed with Gregory and ourselves. What do you mean by Lagrange? I'm sorry. What do you mean?
You just do the decoupling and you just have your phi Lagrangian, a more graviton, and then your phi scalar. That's a nonlinear theory.
That theory should have ghosts. That's right. So the mix, kinetic mixing is very important here. So if you try to decouple these two, you don't get anything. You still have ghosts. So this operator O has is the key. You really need this operator key. Okay, the kinetic mixing is very important. We don't have a full understanding of why this is the operator O brings you a particular simplification at this point. But I have the feeling that since it comes from DGP, it probably is some sort of dimensional reduction from pi dimensional. Yeah.
So what's the difference between this and
No, truncated version has no K, and so you have the ghost. The self-accelerating branch has the ghost that couples to the metric.
So just add a kinetic.
Yeah, we add a kinetic term. So the kinetic term interpreted with the mixing removes the ghost, at least not coupled to the metric anymore at the linearized level. Yeah.
So I think
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That will be nonlinear.
Can you also do that for the mixing?
Yeah, you do that everywhere in the action.
Okay. So everywhere in the action. Because you think there is another ghost. So you were not meaning. That's right. Probably. But in my second story, we believe there is no ghost even in the extra degree freedom. But I don't have very complete proof though. But we believe there is no ghost. Yeah. At this level, yes, there is still a ghost. Okay, so here is where we were thinking about what, since now we seem to be able to live on the boundary, can we actually go all the way into the range? So that was the question. What about this mass smaller than that? Can we remove the ghost even in that range? Okay, of course we have to introduce additional scalar. That's there. We cannot get rid of that one, but at least can we find a model that ghost is not there? Okay. In principle, we think maybe it's possible. The reason is if you have, say, two ghosts like that with some strong, kinetic mixing, then if you diagonalize the theory, it's possible that you really only have one ghost. Of course, because this, if there is a ghost, there's no way your matrix can be a positive definite. So in the end, you always have an active eigenvalue. So there's always a ghost. But you can flip one of them into the normal particle. That is possible. And then the point here is that because we are really having three scalars, tau, sigma, and the new phi we introduced, out of the three scalars, it's possible that we can make two of them normal. And the other one left over is naively is ghost. But remember, out of the three, there's always one that is not dynamic, which can always be integrated on. So this seems like there is a hope that we can make a non-dynamic one that naively looks like a ghost, and the other two makes okay. Okay, so that's roughly this this picture. So that's what we do. So again, I said, okay, let me just keep all the feature structure as it was before. So there is O mu nu here, there's K unknown, some kinetic term unknown, to be determined later. And the O I want, and I like the feature of it very much, so I keep it the way it is. And that, okay, I ignore these details. But in the end, you solve for general M squared, you find the relation is a lot more complicated, really. And phi is given by this relation, and h is related to phi in this way. It's very complicated, seems like. Okay, so from here, phi is propagating because these both are, you know, kinetic operators. And h and phi seems to be kinetically related. But in any case, let me work out the amplitude, which is again just given by this expression. And this m mu nu is this operator I defined for convenience. Okay? It's a complicated operator, has no particular use, but just for a short time. So that's the amplitude. Okay, I have to see that a bit. So this is the amplitude again. In terms of the physical metric, that's what we really want to know. So that's the amplitude. So if I stay at this amplitude, I'll propagate the square. Yeah. But anyway, if I stay at this propagator, I ask myself, how can I avoid ghosts? And it seems to me that the only way to avoid ghosts is to make sure that there's no poles at all inside this bracket, because there is a pole outside. So if there is a single pole inside, if you put out as a double pole, there's always one of them is always ghost, usually. It's the usual story. So I have to make sure there is no pole inside this bracket at all. But in principle, there could be poles because phi is related to t in this particular way. So in principle, there are poles. So the idea is make sure there's no pole. I have to jump ahead and demand that this relation is satisfied. Okay? So this coefficient 1/3 is just chosen by myself because I like 1/3 for some reason. Because that's how I know massive gravity should work at flat space diagram. But I try different coefficients. It seems like only 1/3 can give you no ghost. But this coefficient doesn't really matter too much in terms of simplifications. With this choice, then because I know what phi is given by this, so I can plug this into this equation and end up with an equation reads like this. And that's an equation that determines k for you. So this is the mass equation for my k operator. In order to satisfy that condition, I have to choose k in this particular way. Now I have left these three brackets here, which looks very stupid, but it's not really. Because you notice that when m squared equals to h squared, this equation is automatically satisfied. Okay, that's why in Gregory and Bartos' previous work, they do not find a particular strong restriction for the form of kinetic operator k. Because at that particular point, this equation is always satisfied. So that's why they had simplifications automatically. But in general, however, this equation will determine k for me. So in order to have the simplification, I have to choose my k to be given by this form. And such a choice of k seems to lead to lots of very surprising simplifications, and which I think I still need to think more about that. It probably comes from, again, probably because the dimensional reduction from some higher dimensional framework. But that's, yeah. Once I have chosen this k, I got lots of simplifications. For example, because I haven't touched it for too long.
You cover it on me.
Yeah, I see. I see. So you see, it automatically goes to the last slide as well. That's very nice. Oh, I see. That's me. Okay. So immediately, I have the consequence that actually is really simply related to the -2 phi. Okay, there's no kinetic operators anymore. So these two really become 1 degree freedom together. Okay? And so furthermore, the propagator for phi is also very simple. And then I end up with this final physical propagator for my H menu. If you look at this one, this is just the usual Einstein, Einstein-Hilbert contribution. And so that's the additional thing. That's a combination of both H and phi, because they really are just one dynamical degree freedom, but they mix, combine a particular combination we don't know because we haven't diagonalized the action. But it's a particular combination of H and phi that, that contribute simply as a, looks like a single scalar in there, has this kind of contribution. So this single scalar contribution is positive if 1 plus k is bigger than 0. And therefore, in that case, there will be no ghost that, that is coupled to the H menu. So that's the first condition we reach. For no ghost to couple the H menu physical, I have to satisfy q is bigger than minus 1. So the question is, how about the other combination? Because I said there's only one combination that couples to H menu. But there might be other combination which looks like a ghost. So I have to confess that I don't think it's a rigorous proof, but we have, what we have done is the following. We can turn off the source TBNU temporarily and just couple to phi by additional, by a new source J. This new source J will then excite a different combination of phi and h, right? T mu nu excite a particular combination of phi and h. Now I turn on T mu nu, I turn on j that couples only to phi, not h mu nu anymore. And so this source, this should source a different combination of h and phi. So if I work out all the amplitude and propagate it in that framework and look for ghosts, I find if q is bigger than this combination, there is no ghost. So we have tried two different directions. We find no ghost in, if these both conditions are satisfied. And notice that if mass square is smaller than this, this condition is weaker than this condition. So our conjecture is that this is the strongest condition possible if you look all directions. Okay. And I think it's reasonable because you only have 2 degrees freedom, really. So if you look for 2 directions, you don't find any ghost. It's a strong indication that there is no ghost in the entire spectrum. Okay. Strongly coupled. There's VDV discontinuity again in this story. But the question is, can you choose Q so that you can remove it? It seems like there are ways to choose Q be a dynamical, not dynamical, Q be a function of H and mass square. So you're continuously changing Q. That can allow you to remove VDV discontinuity. But of course, that's not a dynamical mechanism. So we don't, it's not, but it seems like there's a possibility there, I think I should end up somewhere here. Okay, just let me mention that unfortunately in this framework there is no ghost anymore, but there is talking. Okay, the mass square are negative. So depend on what you like. If you want to say apply that to our current universe, then those mass square is all about the order of Hubble. So maybe this tachyonic instability is not such a bad thing. But if you want to apply it for the inflationary models, but then that would be bad.
I think that's the problem, though. Because of the Hubble friction, most free that type of horizon. So even if you have a negative mass square, it doesn't really.
But does it cause instability at the Hubble scale as well quickly? Mm-hmm. Because if the cosmological constant at the inflation stage is big, but you're saying compared to the Hubble at that time is still comparable. So yeah.
Yeah, well, there might be some stuff.
I see. Yeah. We were a bit too naive. I think you're right. We were just saying, okay, at that time cosmological constant is huge, so this instability is very, time frame is very short. But now you're saying it doesn't matter because at that time the Hubble is about the same scale.
Yeah.
So maybe it doesn't really matter. Maybe it's true. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think instability on super rock.
That's right, because
Hubble doesn't
I see. Yeah, because it's still Hubble, so maybe it's not too bad. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. That needs more careful study.
Yeah, but it's not catastrophic.
Yeah, yeah.
It grows faster than it would be a feature. I don't maybe get it on last
time. Yeah. Yeah. It just needs more careful study. It's not that simple. I just had a simple-minded understanding. Okay, anyway, so finally, let me just mention that there's some curiosity about this framework. One thing is if I do a gate transformation for my physical H mu nu, this is a gate transformation of my H mu nu, I rewrite Mac, play with our action a little bit more. And then I end up with this expression. So you find that it's kind of strange that you can choose this C, a single C, to remove both kinetic mixing. In principle, they don't have to have some coefficient, but apparently they do. So if I choose this gauge transformation C, I can remove the kinetic mixing. It's not really remove it, but on the surface, I remove it. And once I do that, I find all three times, any times that involving phi, have the same particular combination Q, this factor here. So this is a common factor. If I set Q to be zero, remember this is the lower bound for the second ghost. If I choose Q to be this one, you see everything disappears. I end up with nothing but the pure Einstein plus Polyphia's mass. So two things happen on the two boundaries we have. When Q equals minus one, phi becomes non-dynamical because it has no kinetic term. When Q equals to this particular combination, so this one is zero, the phi completely disappears, not in the spectrum at all. Of course, once phi disappears, it's just a pure Einstein theory plus Polyphia's mass term. The theory has a ghost, right? Because that's a Higuchi ghost. But that I just remind you, in this case, Q is smaller than minus one, so we are still self-consistent. Right. It breaks our first condition. So we do find the ghost. It's precisely the Higuchi ghost. Okay, so finally, that's my summary. I told you about classical constraint model. Maybe it's a gate fixing of origin, but we need to know, understand the boundary condition better. For the massive spin tool, we found this particular operator is very interesting. And also, correspondingly, there's a particular interesting choice of K that makes the theory very simple. And in that case, when Q is larger than minus one, it appears to be free of ghosts. What we are really wanting to know is whether there's any physical framework that automatically gives you such kind of model. And the feeling is it has to come from some extra dimensional framework, because once you try to diagonalize this action, always you run into non-local operators. So that looks like it's integrating on some higher some field from some higher dimensional framework. And also this Hartleyanic instability was also bothering us, but now you just seems like opening a new project for me to think about, which is very nice. Okay, thank you very much.
Questions? Here, just I forgot to ask you a question. I mean, you are focused on the thing just please, but as I remember,
ABS space.
It was in a, he was doing in ABS.
That's right.
Because for the inter space, you have a additional for the.
No, that's because in ABS space, you don't have the Higuchi ghost. So that BDVC discontinuity disappeared in both the theta and ABS. But in the ADS, it's useful because you don't have ghosts. You can go, you're allowed to go there. But in the theta space, there's Higuchi, you know, forbidden range. So even though there's no VDVD discontinuity, but you have a ghost in the range. So it's not very useful. So that's why in their paper, they focus on ADS space, because that seems to be physically more reasonable, more useful. So that's my reason.
More questions? Yeah, I might be good.
Thank you.